Exactly. Yes, ma'am.
He had broken no Roman law.
Exactly. He had broken no Roman law. So why would Pilate want to kill somebody that at least judiciously had not done anything wrong? And that was the conundrum that Pilate was getting at. It'd be the similar, you know, if that was happening in today's world, and a judge, due to pressure from the people, puts somebody, an innocent man, to death, we would call him a crooked judge. We would call him, you know, kind of a sellout. We would call him certainly to be thrown in jail. And that's exactly the kind of situation that Pilate was in. So he was tasked with upholding the law or doing the will of the people, which could eventually blow up into a huge issue. This situation develops even further when in chapter 19 and verse 1, he scourges Jesus and then brings him out. And I don't subscribe to everything that The Passion of the Christ, the movie that was done by Mel Gibson, depicts, but I thought this scene was really powerful, where he scourges him and then brings him and sets him in front of everybody. Why does Pilate bring the scourged Jesus in front of everybody?
Did he try to placate them more or less?
I mean, I think so.
Yeah, we punished him.
Right. I think that's exactly what happened. You know, the scourging just kind of is mentioned in Scripture, but what all was involved in scourging? Does anybody know? There's a lot more violence than many people would be willing to admit.
They usually died from the scourging itself.
They did.
Most of the time.
Exactly. And most people would put the scourging of Jesus, just the scourging itself, would have landed him in intensive care, at least in the emergency room, exactly. What they did with the scourging was they took this big whip that had a bunch of little tails on it. We call it the cat of nine tails. But all these different little tails on it, and they would put little pieces of pottery, they would put little pieces of bone, little pieces of metal, and they would tie it to them. And then they would just whip them mercilessly. And under Jewish law, you couldn't whip them forever. How many times could you whip them?
39.
Right, 40. Well, actually 40 times. Since the Jews not wanting to break that law, they did it 39 times, exactly. Usually 40 times. The Romans had no such law. And so when they brought Jesus in front of them to be scourged, they just did it mercilessly. And that's the reason I like the movie's depiction of it, because it paints Jesus as nothing more than a bloody mess in front of all of them. But Pilate does this hoping to assuage the people's blood lust that they have for Jesus, but also not deliver him up to be crucified. He's trying to find that middle ground. You have this also, Luke 23 and verse 7, a little nugget that's thrown in as well. Pilate sends Jesus towards Herod because Herod is the Tetrarch of Galilee, so he has more direct jurisdiction over this instance. That'd be similar to a governor sending him to a mayor because he has more direct jurisdiction. Herod has no interest in seeing Jesus. What's that interaction all about? What is Herod's response to Jesus? I'm sorry?
See thou to that.
Okay, see thou to that? Yeah. Well, that's what Pilate, yeah, Herod more or less says back to Pilate. That's exactly right. What is Herod's interest in seeing Jesus, though? Herod's a total buffoon. He's depicted perfectly in Scripture. I don't use that word buffoon a lot, but I like to use it in certain instances. Does anybody remember why Herod wanted to see Jesus? Right. That was the whole reason that he wanted to see Jesus. He was just hoping he would get some kind of miracle. When Jesus stands there and doesn't say anything back to him, Herod just packs him up and sends him back to Pilate because he didn't get what he wanted out of the whole equation. Pilate is trying to avoid any of these types of situations, scourging him, sending him to Herod, just anything to get him out of his hair. Finally, after all of this, the Jews look at Jesus in John the 19th chapter and verse 12. That's in the next chapter from what we just read. They look at him and they say the immortal phrase, "If you release Jesus, you're what?" I'm sorry. Right. You're no friend of Caesar's. Now, this is where the Jews, who are not super politically savvy, this is where they all of a sudden become politically savvy. Because what do they realize? What do they realize about Pilate's situation? Right. He's in a real pickle, as somebody would say. Yeah. He's in a real conundrum. Because if he crucifies Jesus, he's acted against the rule of law because there's nothing in his law that says that he should be put to death. But if he releases Jesus, what's going to happen to the crowd? They're going to riot, exactly. They're going to demand Jesus be killed. They're going to kill him, probably. Then he's got the beginning of an insurrection. Even more importantly, they're going to look at Pilate. Caesar's going to look at Pilate and say, which was the charge against him, you let a known insurrectionist, somebody who was claiming, we have no king but Caesar, as the Jews alleged that Jesus was saying, you let this man just go free. And so if you let this man go free, you're no friend of Caesar's. This is the situation that we find Pilate in. And so while we criminalize him, we demonize him because he was a coward, and he was, when we criminalize him, we overlook the pressure that he was in. When we really get down with the kind of man that Pilate was, at least in my mind, The way that I have always I've tried to characterize him, at least in my mind, is an unintentional coward. He was somebody who should have known better. He was somebody who should have given due process. He was somebody who should have investigated the matter further. But because the forces of the world were acting on him, he caved underneath all that pressure. And that's probably the most alarming part of all of this. Look back at John the 18th chapter. John chapter 18, starting in verse 23. This is when we see this story that happens. Actually, John 18, 33. This is the story that happens between Pilate and Jesus. This is, as far as we know, one of two conversations that Pilate would have with Jesus. And there's a lot in this section. John chapter 18, starting in verse 33, says, "Therefore Pilate entered again into the praetorium, summoned Jesus, and said to him, 'Are you the king of the Jews?'" This is a private conversation. Remember, the Jews weren't going to go in there. "Asked Jesus and said to him, 'Are you the king of the Jews?'" Jesus answers him, because I think in large part he realizes that Pilate's probably not trying to catch him in anything. Verse 34, "Jesus answered and said to this, 'Are you saying this on your own initiative, or did others tell you about me?'" Jesus is savvy to what he's asking. Verse 35, "Pilate answered and said, 'I am not a Jew, am I? Your own nation and the chief priests delivered you to me. What have you done?'" In other words, you explain to me, apart from those people out there that are screaming for your death, you explain to me exactly why you're here and why they want to kill you. And Jesus answered in verse 36. This is the verse we use oftentimes to dispel premillennialism, which it's perfect for that. "Jesus answered and said, 'My kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, then my servants would be fighting so that I would not be handed over to the Jews. But as it is, my kingdom is not of this realm.'" Verse 37, Pilate picks up on this and says, "Are you a king?" or asks him, "Are you a king?" Jesus answers and says back to him, this is where his little dissertation begins. Jesus answers and says, "You say correctly that I am a king. For this I have been born, and for this I have come into the world." And this is the key phrase, "to testify to the truth." And then he builds on it. "Everyone who is of the truth hears my voice."